Everybody, welcome to Tuesday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will take over. Hey, the full 3 hours today for Christopher to 6 o'clock. It's been one of those things between baseball, both Fresno State and the Giants, and the NBA Finals, which are going to continue on Thursday on our air and maybe actually Sunday as well, although that would not impact the local shows. But CG will get the full 3 today when we're done, and then the Giants will come up at 6:05 with the pre, 6:45 first pitch. They and the Padres, a pitched battle for first place. I'm sorry, I tried. Yeah, provided it was like 2006 or whatever it was. But Padres and the Giants tonight, 6:45 first pitch. From what I'm going to guess is going to be about a two-thirds full Oracle Park. That's my hunch. Over the weekend, even with the Dodgers in, those games were sold out a long time ago. But if you saw any of the games, the bleachers were not filled in a 1-0 game. So it wasn't like people were leaving early, for goodness sake. You know, the only run came in the first inning when Bumgarner and Muncy had best 2 or 3 falls. But people are starting to stay home, and I can guarantee you, though the attendance figures are going to still show great numbers, the Giants are not going to see the bodies in the ballpark the way they used to, and that impacts the bottom line, particularly when you want $25 for a churro and a beer. Just an editorial comment about the Giants these days. Anyway, Giants 6:05, 6:45, first pitch on 9:40. The A's continue in St. Petersburg against Tampa Bay. It'll be a 3:45 pre, 4:05 first pitch. The A's losing last night. The A's really been struggling now since they have that very tough series with Houston, not this weekend, but the weekend prior back in Oakland. A's still a good team, and we'll see what happens as we roll through it. And like I said, back to the NBA on Thursday, if the Warriors find a way to win, and I don't know how in the world they're going to do that because the fife and drum is really out big time with the injuries. The last game would be Sunday, and that would follow the Giants, and it would also mean that they get back to Toronto. And I'm going to tell you something right now, is bring our good friend Andrew Martin up, Channel 24, Channel 47, Bulldog Insider on 24. The legendary Bill Russell really is getting tired of the 5.5-hour plane flights from the Bay Area. In fact, Bill is a Bay Area native, and his attitude is, you know what, can I get back home to Seattle where he's lived since he coached the Sonics, or at least can I stay in the Bay Area? Don't ask me to haul this trophy around anymore. It's going to happen at least one more time in Oakland and maybe back to Toronto. We'll see how it happens Thursday and Sunday on the court. All right, let's bring up Andrew right now. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing well, Tony. How are you today?
I'm shaking my head in disbelief, my friend.
I think we all are, yeah.
Yep, you're a guy that the road treats very well, okay? I'm a guy that the road may have treated me well in the 80s. It doesn't work out so well these days, but you know what? We're going to keep on keeping on, right? So hello to your friends in St. Louis, and then Toronto, then Boston, then back home, then to Oakland, and maybe, I know for sure it's going to be all over by Sunday. I'll ask you, we know the National Hockey League will be over tomorrow. NBA going to be over Thursday, or is it going to be Sunday, in your opinion?
Well, first let me say this, Tony. I'll break out the world's smallest violin for you that you get to travel the country to cover.
Shut up.
The Stanley Cup Final and the NBA
Finals. Wait a minute. You spent 2 weeks.
Everyone's throwing you a pity party.
You spent 2 weeks in Brazil sunning yourself back in 2016. Don't tell me about it. Unbelievable. Your work schedule was so great. I remember your work schedule was so perfect for the Olympics that you got at least an hour and a half a day off, right? What are you complaining about? Ryan Lochte were out finding the proper watering holes. Wasn't that the case?
You know, my experiences at the Olympics, and I've been fortunate to cover a few Super Bowls for our parent company.
That's
Next
the other thing I forgot to give you bad time about, too, Mr. Holiday.
Yeah, well, I've had great opportunities and experiences, and I'm certainly not complaining, but they're not vacations. You know how it is, Tony. When you go on the road and you travel, the expectations are enormous. And so there were a lot of live reports for stations all over the country, feature stories, digital content, et cetera. And it gets to the point where whatever free time you have, and it's usually about 20 minutes a day, you're just kind of catching your breath or throwing some type of, granola bar in your backpack to run off to the next event. But I'm not complaining because they were great experiences. To answer your question, though, I actually think that this series is going to go seven games now. I was convinced that the Raptors were going to win last night when Kawhi Leonard went off on that stretch with about 3 minutes to go, and he really had them in control. There was a lot
you and the entire country of Canada, yes, you and everybody
right.
in the Great White North. Yeah, no, look,
right.
There was a lot that was said about that time.
Yeah, there was a lot that was said about that timeout that was called and how it really kind of messed with the momentum. And I mean, obviously, you have to give credit to the Warriors because no lead is safe with a team that can really shoot the long ball with efficiency like Golden State does. But that was a really impressive win. You know, Steph Curry afterwards, I watched SportsCenter and his interview with Scott Van Pelt where he was emotional. You know, Bob Myers was emotional talking about the injury to Kevin Durant. And so they really rallied for him. I think Golden State is going to win Game 6 on its home floor, and then as we get to a Game 7, all bets are off. I mean, the Raptors' best chance to win this series was last night. I'm not saying they're not going to win the series. I do think that they still can, but I would not be surprised if, based off of what Golden State was able to do last night, rallying around when Kevin Durant went out, if Kevon Looney is able to play and be a full go in Game 6, I think Golden State's winning Game 6, and then this series is going 7. I really do.
We'll see what happens. I just think they are too injured right now. But you know, I said yesterday, my heart tells me the Warriors. My head says Toronto, and this is the last word on it. I'll talk to Daryl about it on Thursday, obviously, leading up to the game. But I will tell you this, Andrew, as much as people say it's the last game at Oracle, which we know now it will be. It looked like it might have been the case when Game 4 ended. People say, well, the Warriors don't want to lose the final game ever in Oakland. I agree with that. I will also tell you privately what the players would tell you in a truthful moment to the media, which is difficult because they don't have a great deal of trust. And what you see what's gone on the last 24 hours will tell you why. But the team would rather, if it's going to end in Oakland so they could just go back home quickly, as opposed to having it end in Game 7 with Toronto winning. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. The Warriors want to win Thursday. And they want to win Sunday. But if you were to tell them the murky crystal ball says they're going to lose this series, they would say, okay, let's lose it in 6. So we're close to home, not 5.5 hours, not waiting for the plane flight, not watching the entire country of Canada celebrating around us. So that's where we're at. We'll see what happens. Again, 5 o'clock, the pre from ESPN Radio. They'll tip it about 6:10 at Oracle on Thursday. All right, Andrew, I had an email from Keith. He wanted to know if you, as a Bulldog and Yankee follower of Aaron Judge, worried at all about his physical prowess being such that he's going to be injury prone throughout his career. And he's talking not so much about, you know, a broken hand or what have you, that's a kind of a freak thing, but things like the oblique, where you've got a guy who is, as we've said, Paul Bunyan-esque in every way, shape, or form, and an oblique from torque can be injured. Do you worry that this is going to be a career of these types of nagging injuries from Aaron Judge just because of his physical size?
Yes, I do. And I think I brought this up back in 2017 when we were really talking about him, when he burst onto the scene, you know, leading in all the Triple Crown categories. Obviously, he was, you know, Rookie of the Year. He was an All-Star. He won Major League Baseball's Home Run Derby. I mean, everybody is, you know, is high on Aaron Judge. And I even asked Jessica Mendoza that question. I was fortunate to get a one-on-one interview with her that aired during Bulldog Insider on Sunday. And I said to her, I said, as a national baseball analyst, what do you think of Aaron Judge and how do you see his career progressing? And her answer was very interesting because she talked more about him as a person than of a player. She, you know, kind of casually threw aside, well, we could break down his swing, we could do this, but, you know, we're learning a lot about him as a leader when he's hurt. And I thought it was really telling the fact that she didn't go into, you know, his prowess or his power or his ability to draw walks, stuff like that. I mean, we know Aaron Judge is talented. We saw it at Fresno State. He's a guy, you know, who, you know, really pitchers have to game plan for because he can make contact, you know, as much as he can hit the ball out of the park. And it's funny because we didn't really see that as much at Fresno State. His power really developed in the minor leagues of the Yankee system. But he's got the power, you know, I mean, he's got speed for a guy his size. But we also, Tony, have talked about him being in uncharted territory. A guy who's 6'7", 285, has really not had the type of success in Major League Baseball ever, because it's not your typical, you know, they always talk about the prototypical quarterback in the NFL who's 6'2 or 6'3 and like 200 and, you know, 20 pounds, 230 pounds, something like that. Aaron Judge is far from prototypical. So it's great to see him have success. And, you know, as your emailer mentioned, you know, me being a Yankees fan and obviously somebody who's covered Bulldog Athletics for, you know, going on 11 years now, I was fortunate to see Aaron Judge come up through the Fresno State system. And I joked with him like everybody else when he was a freshman, how come you're not on the basketball team? And, you know, looking up at a guy who was, you know, 6'7", I think he was 6'6 at the time, he might have grown an inch once he officially kind of transitioned from freshman to sophomore and then junior at Fresno State. But he was just a good guy, down-to-earth, great personality, and you want to root for guys like that. So hopefully he's got a lengthy career, but the fact that he has been injury-prone and he's only been in the bigs since, I mean, he made his debut in the summer of 2016. So he's a guy who, yes, unfortunately, I think that you kind of have to pencil him in as getting hurt because we, you know, again, we're in uncharted territory. I think that's the best way to describe what we're seeing from Aaron Judge. Hopefully he comes back. There's been talk that you know, that he'll be back by the London series. I mean, he will come back this season, but there's been talk that he'll be back in a couple of weeks, and hopefully he is, because you know, the Yankees, Major League Baseball, and Fresno State would, you know, would all love to, you know, to see him be successful on the national stage. But it's been frustrating seeing him sidelined more than a few times so far.
Yeah, and I am concerned that it's not that he's going to have a career-ending injury. It's just going to be this constant nagging injury sort of deal. You know, Reggie Jackson was so heavily muscled in the thighs because he was a fine football player back in Pittsburgh, that with the A's it became a chronic one muscle pull after another. He missed a World Series because of it. And he was actually a guy that to try to protect from the pulled hamstrings, Andrew, he would slide to try to make catches if he was heading toward the line in right field. Not sliding like you see now to, you know, prevent yourself from hitting the retaining fence or something near the stands in foul territory, but rather he would slide on the field of play just to try to break without having to take that jump stop, because he kept pulling hamstrings all the time and it became a real problem for him. And with Aaron, because he, like I said, he's Paul Bunyan-esque, the guy is built like a brick, you know what. We talked about it when he won the home run derby. It looked like Gulliver and the Lilliputians, right? You had guys that were 6'1". LSU had the one guy 6'1". It looked like one guy and a bunch of kids out there, Andrew. That's how big Aaron Judge is, particularly. You don't see it in the NBA, you see it all the time. You do not see it in Major League Baseball like this.
No doubt, Tony, and the fact that he is larger than life, both literally and figuratively, is amazing. You know, people, myself included, all the time have had the discussion about Derek Jeter, and would he have been as great and as beloved, certainly as a player, not as an owner. I mean, what he's been doing in Miami has been questionable at best, but as a player for 20 seasons with the Yankees, I mean, he was an icon and larger than life in the sense that, you know, everyone wanted to be him. You know, guys were envious of not only his rings, his money, his playing ability, but also the women that he dated. I mean, he was, you know, he was the typical guy that, you know, that everybody looked up to for a lot of different reasons. But you kind of wonder if Derek Jeter was playing in, let's say, Kansas City, if he would have been as big of a name. I mean, Mike Trout is a huge, you know, name in baseball, but most people, and this has been talked about a lot too, most people who are outside of baseball circles know who Derek Jeter is, but they wouldn't know Mike Trout if he was walking down the street in front of them. If you're a diehard baseball fan, you know, but if you're a casual fan, you may not know. And with Aaron Judge, I mean, he burst onto the scene so quickly. He was so popular. You know, I mean, he tried to avoid the endorsements until, I think, after towards the end of his rookie season is when he really started with, you know, with Pepsi. And I know he's doing stuff with Sharpie and, you know, he's giving back to his community. I mean, he truly is a great guy. He really is. I just think that it's unfortunate that, you know, he is sidelined. But you know what? And I hate to look at it from the business side, but, you know, the fact that he is injured as often as he is might make the Yankees rethink giving him a massive deal when it is time for him to potentially reach arbitration and or free agency. Because he's somebody right now that is a complete bargain. He's only making, like, I say only, but, I mean, he's making $600,000 a year, which is peanuts in professional athlete standards, whereas Giancarlo Stanton, who's currently on the injured list along with Judge, is making $25 million this season. It may be difficult for Judge to cash in on a long-term contract if he can't prove that he can stay healthy. So that also is a factor here for his long-term, you know, his long-term future and career. Hopefully that's not the case, and people say, you know what, it's worth the risk, and he's been great for us so far. But you never know when it comes to business decisions.
You're right. They should ship him to Minnesota so he can be on that fence-wrecking team that's going to hit 500 home runs by the time the year ends. That's by the way, and we're going to move on here, but that is something that makes your point. You win in New York, you win for the Yankees, you have to win, then you are larger than life. Look at what's going on in Minnesota right now, and nobody's noticing, well, the Twins hit six home runs a night because they're in Minneapolis, and that's just the reality
right.
of it. All right, I want to ask you, Andrew, about you had visits with both Terry and Frank about the marketing situation at Fresno State. Frank was just on with you over the weekend. I thought Bob Kawada hit it really well in the B. The Pride of the Valley stuff is just very well done. It's awe-inspiring. If you grew up here, even if you didn't, but particularly if this has been your home, and for me for 62 and a half years, that you really are inspired by that. But the question that's being asked, and I think it's a fair one, does it merely reinforce those that are already following the program, Andrew, or does it, more importantly, draw the peripheral fan or a fan who doesn't know he or she's going to be a fan in the future, draw them into the tent? You know, we talk about this marketing-wise. I don't care what you're marketing. You have to get people in the tent. Doesn't matter how compelling your message is. If people are not there to hear it, then it's not going to work. Are we at a point, Andrew, where it's going to draw more people, or do you say the question Kawada brought up is legit? Is it going to result in more people coming to games, more people donating, the kind of things you want for Pride of the Valley? Very well done piece, no doubt about it.
Right. Well, that's the hope. Obviously, that's the hope. It's both the short-term and the long-term goal is, you know, to kind of reinvigorate this community with exactly what the Green Bee stands for. And Frank Kuchar brought it up, you know, a few times during our interview, and he and I have talked, you know, both off-air about it as well. And the whole philosophy behind the Green V, sometimes it can get lost because, you know, it's been around for a while and it's, you know, it started with obviously, you know, Pat Hill, but it kind of morphed into an all sports thing. And if you go to any sporting event on campus, you'll see every single uniform infused in some, you know, way with the Green V. But just slapping a Green V on something does not necessarily mean that you are ingrained in the community and with what the Valley stands for. So I really like this campaign. I thought the video they put out was very well done. The fact that they've got billboards and lawn signs and they're trying to get out to everybody in the community, not just Fresno and Clovis, but, I mean, we saw some of the photos that they were putting out on social media. They were in Reedley. And, you know, we know obviously these coaches' caravans that they're taking to Turlock and Modesto and Visalia, et cetera. That's to really get the entire community behind Fresno State. But everything, you know, works hand in hand with everything else, Tony. And how many times have we had this conversation? You could have the best marketing campaign in the world. You could trot out Laker girls for a home game, for crying out loud. You still have to win on the field. They have a unique opportunity right now, and I brought this up with Frank, where you've got a football team that won 12 games in a conference championship. You have a men's basketball team that won 23 games and unfortunately got snubbed for the NIT, but still had a great season under a first-year head coach. You have a baseball team that won 40 games and two championships, regular season and conference. So you have a unique situation right now where you're rolling out this new marketing campaign. Terry Toomey's still technically in his first year. He hasn't been here for a full 12 months yet as the athletic director. Frank is part of his staff, and so they're kind of putting their stamp on things, and I like the direction that things are headed. But, of course, what it's going to take is for these sports programs to keep winning. I mean, if Fresno State can go out there and beat USC on August 31st, then that sets the tone for the next week against Minnesota, but certainly for the season as well. So I like the campaign, and the hope is that short-term and long-term, people really get behind the message of Fresno State. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, like you do and like others do, Tony, that the people who were already coming to the games, the people who were already aware of the program, look at this as, oh, that's kind of nice, but I'm still going to support the program because I always have. It's to try and catch the, you know, the peripheral fan, to try and catch the casual fan who may have been either on the fence or slowly backpedaling for whatever reason. You know, I mean, you wouldn't fault people for making that decision to not spend money back in 2016 for the football program, or, you know, back in the mid-2010s under, you know, Steve Cleveland, and then leading into Rodney Terry for basketball, where those programs were in transition. You could still, of course, make the argument that if you're a diehard fan, or even if you're a casual fan, you should support the program, you know, at its lowest of lows, because that's when the program truly, you know, needs the fan support. But at the same time, it's nice to be able to do something that resonates with the entire Valley and market the student athletes who are Bulldog born, Bulldog bred. So I like the message. Had a really good conversation with Frank. I think Fresno State has been on the right track for a long time. Hopefully the sports teams, especially the key sports that get a lot of national attention, can keep up their winning ways. And then we'll see what happens in both the near future and the distant future.
Your points are well taken, Andrew. And I will tell you this. It's easy to say this in any given year, but in particular, I think it's pertinent in the 1920 academic year. And that is, you have the confluence of a couple of things here that you didn't before. And that is the basketball and football teams, both, as you mentioned, on an upswing. You have two coaches that have direct Valley roots. You have Jeff Tedford, though, as you know, is a SoCal native, who really is a native son here now because he played here, he's coached here, his kids were born here. For goodness sake, when you look at Jeff, you don't think of Southern California, you think of Fresno State. And obviously with Hutt, grew up in Bakersfield, he made it clear how much this job meant to him. So you have two teams on an upswing. You have two coaches that are part of this area. We have talked, Andrew, about the natural lag that you have when your team is playing poorly before people catch on again. Okay, what happened football-wise the end of 14 and throughout 15 and 16 did send a lot of people away. But 17 and 18, if that hasn't put a fan base into a position to be poised to come back en masse for 2019, Andrew, I don't know what will. And I've heard this about the USC game, and I know that the Bulldogs are double-digit underdogs or whatever that means. I don't know how you can predict that game right now, in all honesty, because I don't know what the Trojans are going to be like, and the Bulldogs have so many new faces. I know this. Fresno State's going to be a lot better in November than they are in September. It doesn't mean
But when it comes to predictions, it's funny. You know, the All-Mountain West teams came out by Phil Steele yesterday.
Right, and the 10 Bulldogs there, right.
Right, but, you know, Scott Bemis was on air for us last night, and, you know, he, of course, reported on it. But, I mean, the fact that, you know, that Ronnie Rivers is a third-team selection when clearly he's one of the top running backs, if not the top running back in the league, is mind-boggling to me. But then, you know, you look at I actually looked at the fourth team, and I saw the quarterback for the fourth team, according to Phil Steele, is Sean Chambers from Wyoming. And obviously he's, you know, a kid from Kerman who was named the starting quarterback, and he got a few starts last year before he was hurt. But you're telling us that he's the fourth best quarterback in the Mountain West when he has, what, five starts career under his name? I mean, maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. But like you said, Tony, it is so tough to predict just because we don't know. I mean, you mentioned the USC game from 2014, and I brought this up with you both on air and off air numerous times. There are so many parallels that could be made right now between where this Fresno State team is and where this USC team is between 2013 and 2014 and now 2018 and 2019, where the Bulldogs played the Trojans in that 2013 Las Vegas Bowl, Derek Carr's last game. Cody Kessler was the quarterback for USC. You know, Devontae Adams was on that team. You had Josh Shaw on the other team. I mean, really, really talented players, and a lot of players who did not come back the next season because they were seniors and they graduated, or in the case of Adams, you know, he left as a draft-eligible junior and was taken, obviously, by the Packers. So in 2014, Fresno State was breaking in a new quarterback, opened the season by going down to USC. The result turned out to be less than stellar, but that was a USC team that was in transition. It was a USC team that had struggled. They got through several coaches the previous year. This USC team is also a team that's in transition, and Fresno State is losing a lot of players, including the quarterback. So a lot of parallels that you can make, you know, from 6 years ago, I guess 5 years ago, to the start of the 2014 season to the start of the 2019 season. But what's really interesting to me, and I've mentioned this to you a few times before, I really feel like if Fresno State has a good season this year, and I think we all expect the Bulldogs to not have a 12-win season after losing 30 players, but to have a good season, that this is really going to be the test for Jeff Tedford. When he came in 2017, what he did with that program was amazing, a 10-win season in his first year. But the expectations were a lot lower because they were coming off a 1-win season and an interim coach in Eric Kesaw after DeRuiter got fired with 4 games left in the season. So Jeff Tedford, we all assumed, was going to turn around the program. I don't think anybody envisioned that he would turn a 1-win program into a 10-win program in his first season. You know, again, of course, it helped that Marcus McMarion came in, during fall camp and turned out to be, one of the best decisions that Fresno State ever made by handing over the reins to him, for the bulk of that season. But this year, I feel like if Jeff Tedford can have a really good season for this team, if they can win, making it up 8-9, potentially 10 games, make it back to the conference championship, then that'll really say a lot for him because all of his guys are in the program, and now the pressure is on and the expectations are there because of the 22 wins of the last two seasons. But I think everybody's excited about the prospect of seeing, how they can keep this train rolling. It's the one thing, basically, Tim DeRuiter's, main flaw was when he came in 2012 and 2013, the program was at the top of the Mountain West Conference. They won a share of the championship in 2012, 9 wins. In 2013, it was all theirs. They won 11 games that year, and then the train kind of, was derailed at that point. Nobody expects the train to be derailed this time. It's just a matter of how will Fresno State do, knowing all the talent that the Bulldogs lost. There's still plenty of talent in the program, but it is tough to replace that many players, and especially guys like Mike Bell and, Jeff Allison, who could have potentially been back. But they knew that McMarion was going to be gone. They knew that all the other seniors on the team were going to be gone. So, like I said, I feel like this year is really going to be the test, for Jeff Tedford to cement himself as one of the best coaches in Fresno State history. He's certainly on his way there, but this is going to be a really tough test for him this year. But I think he can do it, and I think a lot of people are excited to see how the Bulldogs will do. We're only 2 months away from the start of fall camp, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. The season will begin in 3 months.
Well, yeah, you have guys working out on their own right now, and that means you're going to have that go on, then they'll break a couple of weeks prior to camp and get ready for it. A couple of things, Andrew. One, first of all, as far as the predictions, the all Mountain West teams or whatever, DeMarcus Cousins last night had a two-word response twice about the Toronto fans cheering the Kevin Durant injury. Both responses were the same. Bleep them, okay? And that's my response about these preseason polls and all of this stuff, okay? Because as you're mentioning, if you are going to ask the coaches in the league, who do you fear out of the Bulldog backfield in comparison to the rest, particularly in the division, they would say, Ronnie Rivers, and they would say that in Boise, by the way, Ronnie Rivers scares the daylights out of us every time he touches the ball. That's
no doubt.
In the respect. Whatever. Opinions.
The one thing.
Opinions are like, what? Everybody has one and they all stink.
Everybody has
okay?
one. Right.
Yes.
The one thing that I'll say when it comes to preseason, preseason rankings, preseason polls, et cetera, and every coach that I've ever talked with has said exactly the same thing. It doesn't matter till the end of the season. We want to be number one at the end of the season. We want to, we want to have all the accolades at the end of the season. I totally get that. But the reason why preseason polls are important is because it gets people talking about your program. So even though the coaches never want to address potentially being in the top 25 or facing a team in the top 25 and stuff like that, it gets people talking, and not just people in the local markets talking, it gets people nationally talking. If you want to generate interest and you want fans to come to your games and, buy your product and really support your program, if you can say we've got the preseason player of the year, if you can say we're going into the season ranked 21st or whatever it is, if you can say, we've got these big names, on the schedule and they come in with a lot of history, all that does is generate excitement and interest for your program, and that's never a bad thing. So as much as Jeff Tedford and basically every coach before him, as much as they hate us saying, hey, what's it like to be in the top 25, and he gives us the same answer every time, he knows as well as we do the fact that people are talking about the Bulldogs being ranked in the top 25 means people are talking about the Bulldogs, and it also means recruits are taking notice and being aware of what the Bulldogs are doing. So it's not a bad thing. As much as they would love to not have the distractions, it's not a bad thing when people are talking positively about your program.
You're right. But two things I wanted to ask you in closing. One, is the carryover concern, and there was a lot of it about the lack of attendance on Senior Day. You had look, I realize the game didn't have great meaning because you had sewn things up and all of that stuff, but Andrew, you would have expected mid-30s, not mid-20s, for goodness sake. I mean, were the alarms sounded at all, in your opinion, when you're saying you're coming off and out? Whatever happened in 17, you can say, well, you know, people weren't ready for it. And you'd be right, because we were projecting you'd get the 5 wins, and you might 0 for November. Remember we were talking about that? In reality, the team far exceeded that. But last year, you heard the train coming down the track. Why was it not more of a celebration for the seniors? What happened there, in your opinion?
I don't know, but I'll even bring it back to Senior Day 2017 when they were playing Boise State. Broncos were nationally ranked. It was Senior Day. I think it was Military Appreciation Day. You know, playing host, we thought, playing host for the Mountain West Championship game was on the line, turned out not to be. But the crowd for that game was pretty weak, too. And to be honest, Tony, I really don't know. The only thing that I can think of is because people who were so disillusioned by the three consecutive, you know, losing.
Well, not to interrupt you, Andrew, but that's the point about 2017 I was making. I'm willing to forget it for 2017 because of the 2 years plus prior. Last year, I can't take that leap. I can't give people the benefit of the doubt being disillusioned when you had seen it unfold in 2017 and you saw it clearly in 2018. This is a team in 2018, if not for one play in Minnesota, look out. You're talking about a team that was pushing up toward the top 10. I just don't know, and I'm not blaming the fans. I'm saying I'm not going to put the disillusionment on 2018. There's something else going on. I don't know if it's a change, a generational change. I don't know if it is what I've heard from a lot of people. You know what? I've got a family of four, and I spent a lot of dough on a 70-inch HD or 4K set, and it's just easier to barbecue, and I love Fresno State, and I follow them all the time, but it's easier to stay home than to go. Doesn't mean I don't care, but it means I'm not going to the stadium. I don't know, Andrew, where the push and pull is in this thing, but I think it is a genuine concern at Cedar and Barstow. That would be my guess.
Yes, and I completely agree. And one other factor that you would hope would bring more fans to the program and to the, you know, to the support systems, in addition to wins and losses, is the fact that Jeff Tedford has done a tremendous job of recruiting local and also, you know, having those guys become stars. I mean, when you have a quarterback, and that's obviously the most recognizable position on the field, who's from Dinuba, you know, I mean, one of their best defensive players, Juju Hughes, is from Hanford. I mean, Ronnie Rivers is not necessarily from Fresno, but he's a legacy. And his father, you know, was with. Exactly. So there are a lot of reasons for people to support this program because it supports this community. So I'm with you. I am baffled at the fact that people, and again, I've said this to you before, I feel like in 2014 through 2016, the program won 6 games, 3 games, 1 game. They were going downhill and everybody knew it, you know, certainly by the middle portion of that second season. But that's when, you know, that's when your fandom is really tested. But in 2017, it didn't take long for people to realize that Fresno State was in the midst of a special season. I know they lost to, you know, Alabama and Washington in back-to-back weeks, and those games were not particularly close. But by the time conference play rolled around and Marcus McMarion became the starter and taking over for Chase and Virgil, people were starting to get a sense that, you know what, this team can really get it done. And it's unfortunate that they lost that game to UNLV, but the program had a special season. So there was no excuse for people to not show up, especially towards the latter portion of that season, that schedule, when I mentioned the Boise State game on Senior Day. But also in 2018, you're right. I mean, coming off a 10-win season, you know, getting excited about McMarion being a senior, getting excited about Keyshawn Johnson, you know, trying to break all these records. There was no excuse for fans to not show up. And as Pat Hill has said numerous times, we're only asking people to show up 6 times a year. You know, the basketball program has it much tougher because you're asking for, you know, 18 home games or something like that. But for 6 football games, 6 times a year, they're asking people to show up. It's not that much. But I don't know what the solution is. I really don't. I mean, the one thing that we know will drive people to Bulldog Stadium is, consistent winning, certainly, and also big-name opponents. You know, when Wisconsin was here, when Nebraska was here, even when Rutgers was here in 2013, I mean, they had great crowds for those games. So I think the best thing to do is just, you know, keep putting your best foot forward. If the program's, you know, if the program is out there and winning, and this Pride of the Valley campaign is as successful as I think we all expect it to be, then, you know, hopefully. hopefully fans will show up for the Minnesota game regardless. But you and I both know that if Fresno State does lose to USC on August 31st, you're not going to get a sellout crowd for Minnesota the following Saturday. It's going to take a win over USC to probably see 41,000 plus. And it's unfortunate, but that probably is the reality of the situation. I think Fresno State will get a good crowd regardless, mid-30s. But if the Bulldogs beat USC, it might be pushing 40,000.
Fair enough. And then the last thing for you. Is there a gap, in your opinion, last 2 minutes here, between the old guard and the current moneyed aristocracy? And I don't use that term in regard to, you know, the people that have money falling out of their pockets as they walk along, but the people that can afford to give to the program, Andrew, and attend the games. Is there a gap between the original group, and I'm not just about age, but a gap in philosophy, where what was important to those that are now in their 60s and 70s is just not as important to those that are in their 40s and 50s now, and maybe beyond those that are in their 20s and 30s that are still dealing with a lot of expenses and young families? Those are three different tiers. Is there a substantial gap in philosophy between the three tiers, in your opinion, right now? And is that a major issue trying to reach people here in the Valley? Because finances are in there. You know, this is not San Francisco. You can't go to Silicon Valley to get your dough, you know. It's not L.A. You can't run to the entertainment industry. You got to tap the people that have the wherewithal, but it seems like those that have the wherewithal that are in that middle tier in the 40s and 50s right now are not nearly as interested en masse as the ones that came before. And, of course, the ones that are in that third tier right now, they just have too many other expenses. It's just something that really is of great concern to me for the longevity of everything at Fresno State.
Yeah, no doubt, Tony. And you've got a couple of problems there. Is you can't keep going to the well of, I think Mark wrote about it in the B about a year or two ago, to now the gray wave, you know, because the red wave is getting older. You can't keep tapping that well because those people have already given substantial amounts and they continue to support the program. It would be nice to get some younger donors and boosters and some new fan support. But at the same time, people's viewing habits have changed, and we certainly see it, you know, in my profession, the TV side of things, which you know quite well, obviously, because you did it for a number of years. But now with the whole digital aspect and with, you know, everybody's devices, I mean, things are not appointment viewing events anymore. People want it when they want it, and they want it in the way that they want it, whether it's on their phones, their computers, their tablets or whatever. So things have changed. And the way to really appeal to everybody is to understand that everybody's different and to find a marketing plan that is not universal, but that caters to the individual fan and the individual fan's needs. And I know that that's a lot more work. It's certainly more work on our part because now whenever we do things, we have to think, what's gonna really get our product out there to the most people, knowing that, you know, there is no one solution. You know, we can't just go on air with our broadcast and call it good. We have to make sure that there's a social and a digital element as well. And I think Fresno State has a really good team in place, and we saw it certainly from the Stanford regional a couple of weekends ago when they had four people there who were solely doing stuff just for digital. And it's important because the fans who made the trip there to Stanford are watching the games in person, but the ones who were not there want to feel like they're connected and they want to really get behind the program and everything that it has and everything that it stands for and all the little nuggets. So people could potentially, you know, who weren't there, listen to Paul on the radio and also be following it along on their phone or on their game tracker, whatever it is. And I think that really is, I mean, everybody knows this. It's not the wave of the future. It's the wave of the present. That's where we are right now. But there is definitely a different mindset for people who are, you know, current student athletes, current students, people who are in their 20s and 30s, and then people in their 50s and 60s. Absolutely. You know, because the old guard doesn't necessarily, you know, change their way of thinking, but the new guard wants to do things differently than the way the old guard did. So, I don't know what the solution is. It's constantly a work in progress. I think the best thing to do is just keep the lines of communication open. As a university, Fresno State needs to be willing to listen to people with ideas and also have people who have the vision to implement them. And I think right now what we're seeing is this university is trying to cater to what its fans want. And we'll see, you know, with more promotions when they get rolled out during the course of the season, both for football and beyond. And that was part of the conversation I had with Frank. You know, how do you do things here moving forward? So I think we all like the direction that Fresno State's heading in, and you know, we'll see if the programs can back it up on the field.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're right on all counts, and I'll let you go by telling you something I've mentioned many times. When our good friend Annie Bogard went to Auburn, Alabama, when Fresno State played the game there in 96 in Sweeney's last year, when Annie came back, we were talking on air, he said the difference between Fresno State and what goes on in Auburn is legacy. Kids grow up wanting to be a War Eagle, which is, you know, what most of the people refer right. to it there, or Tiger, whatever you want to, you know, technically call it. But the biggest thing was, and the takeaway I had from it, was every generation builds on the one prior, and there is never a concern there. And I realize that's a college area that doesn't have a lot of pro influences around it. I also know they're playing at an extraordinary high level. We know that. But beyond all of that stuff that's out of your control, the reality is, Andrew, you have a fan base that grows up wanting to be part of it. So you don't worry that the next generation is not going to be interested in giving to the university. It is a never-ending cycle. It's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge there. Everybody is there behind the next person. And when they're done, there's somebody else coming up. And you can ride around to the start, and the other generations pick it up and move forward. Fresno State is still relatively young in this process, since the decision was made at the start of the 80s to make the programs athletically a big deal. We're still seeing the growing pains even 40 years later, and I'm very interested to see whether the generations coming up that have the wherewithal are also going to have the interest to push it forward. We will find out about it. Andrew, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great week. Enjoy yourself. My back is somewhere still in the Midwest, so you be sure if you see it there to pick it up and bring it back to California. I'll return on Thursday. Hopefully the Warriors will send me back to Toronto. They may want to leave me there. We'll see what happens. Always appreciate it, my friend. Take care.
You got it, Tony. If we find your back, we'll put it on the same training table as Durant's Achilles.
Yeah, well, I lost my back about the mid-90s, so it's been MIA for quite a while. All right, we'll see you later. All right, guys, our good friend Andrew Martin, Channel 24, Channel 47, Bulldog Insider, still at 6 o'clock on Sunday night at 24. It will follow Sunday Night Football. Be here before you know it as we head very rapidly toward football season. Take a break a little bit more on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:54 here for a couple more minutes, then Sports Center update, then CG up full 3 hours, CGP today, and then 6:05 Los Gigantes hosts the Padres tonight. The first pitch, 6:45 at Oracle Park, over on our sister station, the Deuce 790, not too far away from the A's pregame, game two in Tampa St. Pete against the Rays, who are a very good team, and the A's, who should be, it just hadn't been that way the last couple of weeks. First pitch at 4:05 with Korak and Cotronio. Now, one thing I want to mention, and we have been doing this since the start of May, and amazingly, it's how quickly time moves on. We are now headed toward the fundraising fishing tournament weekend. We have talked about Mason Frulli, the 11-year-old battling brain cancer. Had one surgery, but the tumors very, very tragically returned. Last I checked with our good friend Gary, his son Ryan, Mason, I think, is still planning to attend the event unless his health issues prevent it. It is the fishing tournament, the fundraiser at Lake McClure, June 15th. 80 boats or more going to participate. We've said this. If you want to check out more, if you want to give, whatever you can do in the way of money or prizes, what have you, I know we're closing in on the event because that is this Saturday. Go to Facebook to Fishing McClure for Mason. Go to Team Mason. Either way, you can get more information, and I just cannot imagine a more worthwhile cause. And as we've talked over and over again, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're battling cancer of any kind, our hearts go out to you. Whenever we can do to help, we certainly will. But it is in particular a real tough situation when you're talking about an 11-year-old going through this. Like I said, nobody should have to go through it, particularly not an 11-year-old. And so whatever you can do to help, please do so. There's a GoFundMe account. You can get all that information. But check out Fishing McClure for Mason. It is this Saturday at Lake McClure, and we hope very much it's a tremendous success. I know that Gary, his son Ryan, one of the guides, great effort, and a lot of people have been there to help the family, and it brings out the best in people. You just wish it didn't take this kind of event to show us how much people care. But once again, June 15th, Lake McClure. Go to Facebook, Fishing McClure for Mason, Mason Ferulli, 11-year-old, and we hope to goodness that another surgery will take these tumors away for good. And we'll talk more about it as we roll through the week. We'll talk to Jackson tomorrow. Daryl will be with me on Thursday prior to Game 6 of the Warriors and the Raptors. And we'll get to Marcus and then CG on Friday with your emails. All right, guys. Hope you have a great rest of the day. And get ready for CG. I'll have a terrific 3 hours for you. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 2:05 on KFIG Fresno. Thank you.